This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You got Matt Miller on all the time.
Matt Miller.
Here I come. You ready?
Lead NFL and NFL draft analyst at Bleacher Report.
In NFL, you need guys who have upside and potential, and you have to have something that kind of makes you special.
The Stick to Football Podcast.
We ain't got to talk about too much. We're just having fun and we're working, baby. That's it.
Going through college and NFL film.
You need to be just an MF-er out there where you're going to put this guy on the ground every play.
Matt Miller with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
He's where he wants to be right now. This is the best time to talk to Matt Miller. This is peak Matt Miller time at NFL Draft Scout, Bleacher Report, the Stick to Football Podcast, and the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama, the parade of shirtless men, the measuring of hands. We are back at it as Matt Miller joins the Bernstein and McKnight show. Set the scene for us, Matt.
Well, I'm sitting on a back porch in Mobile right now. You talk about like the weigh-in and stuff, and this is my eighth or ninth year. I've kind of lost track. I used to go to weigh-in. Number one, like, I don't want to get up at 7 in the morning anymore. Like, we did a live show at a bar last night. I'm not getting up at 7 to watch a bunch of dudes in their underwear. I can get the measurements on my laptop when I roll out of bed at 8:30. So it's cool down here, though. Like, this is a very good class. Jim Nagy, the new executive director, has done a fantastic job of staffing this roster. And you know, the deck is stacked against him a lot of ways, because if you're a pretty good college football player, a good draft prospect, you leave after your junior year. We saw 135 of them just do it. And it really leaves Jim and his scouts, I think, in some ways, like, trying to find 110 good players to put on this roster. So the fact that they've done it this year with, and there might be 6 or 7 first-round picks who have been invited down here. One of them had to drop out due to injury, but it's already looking like a really good group, especially, I know Bears fans don't need a quarterback anymore, so we don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but this quarterback group from top to bottom is the best one that I've ever seen down here.
Saw you tweeting about this last week, Matt. Are there more players than draft spots for the coming draft? Are there more players that would otherwise be drafted than there are teams with picks?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, it's something that I was in L.A. last week, the NFLPA game, and down here already this week, like, talking to the GMs, coaches, like, now, why don't we just expand the draft? And maybe that's, like, me being self-serving, you know, because, like, yeah, I want to talk about 10 rounds of the draft instead of 7, but I actually think it would be beneficial, and it would help these guys who, a lot of times, you know, you're going to go from a 7th-round pick to an undrafted free agent. That amount of money is incredibly different. So I can understand why the NFL doesn't want to do it and why it's not gaining a lot of traction. But and one thing that I get asked all the time is, man, why all these juniors are entering? What are we going to do? This is such a big problem. And to me, it's a pretty easy answer. Well, you're not going to change it. It's only trending with more guys declaring every year. So why not try to do something to at least give them, you know, a leg up in the process where, you know, they can't go back to school if they're not drafted. So why don't we get more guys in the league? Everyone already wants to expand the active roster to, you know, whether it's 60 players. So, like, let's just open the draft back up. Maybe it's 8 rounds. Maybe it's 10. But getting 135 juniors plus, there are like 400 seniors that I have to evaluate to pare that list down. There's like 256 picks. So it makes it really difficult to, you know, find the guys who deserve to be picked when you're dealing with a pool that's now 600 players.
When the Senior Bowl first started, there was a vast difference between college football and pro football. And one of the things that this did was it allowed pro coaches to get you in the room, to get you on the board, identify this front, understand this is the kind of offense we run, and start speaking a new language. Well, now the two games have never been closer together. How has the increasing homogenization of football, the idea of just find a good play from anywhere, and the guys like Peterson and Nagy and McVay are just using whatever they can find, how has that changed the nature of the Senior Bowl itself, if at all?
Well, I think it allows, like, the quarterbacks to come in and hit the ground running. We saw it last year. Baker Mayfield, his mom was unfortunately ill. She was in the hospital. he got on a flight and basically got here, took an Uber to practice, and changed and started playing. And he looked fine. And I think we're going to see that this year with some of the quarterbacks. You're just like, we're all speaking the same language now. Instead of where before it was like, everybody's playing football, but you're calling the same thing 10 different routes, you know, or 10 different blitz pickups or different stunts. Like, now it's kind of all the same. You know, it's like coverages. Cover one's cover one. Cover two's cover two. And I think it has allowed guys to come in and not have to think as much. And that's so important to this process, which is why a lot of people will kind of crap on the actual game. Like, I like watching the game because of that. Like, I want to see from Monday to Saturday how well guys develop. Now, last year, Marcus Davenport was MVP of the game. He had a terrible practice on Tuesday, but we got to see him develop every day and learn and get better. So I think the fact that you don't have to come down and like learn Greek just to play football, you can kind of relax and just open up. I remember one of my coaches used to say, you get paralyzed when you have to analyze on a football field. And now guys don't have to do that as much.
I'll click over to Championship Sunday that we all have just experienced and railed about here for the last 48 hours or so, because that's what we do. You've been a proponent of Jared Goff. You've kind of preached his ability and his, I don't know, stick-to-itiveness, his wherewithal in that second half. Convince me a little bit, Matt. I've gone against him some, and I was very surprised that the Rams were able to get done what they were able to get done in that second half. What am I missing? What should I see?
Well, I think too often when we talk about Jared Goff, there's going to be two sides. There's a line drawn. And one side will automatically say, well, he's a system quarterback. He's just Sean McVay gives him the play call. He stands at the line of scrimmage. And until the 15-second clock hits, Sean McVay tells him what to do. I understand that. But Sean McVay is not throwing the ball for him. Like, Sean McVay is not out there pointing Jared Goff's arm and eyes in the right spot once the play starts. And he still has to execute. Like, yes, it's a beautiful scheme. He still has to make the throws. He still has to make the decisions. Just like Tom Brady, just like Drew Brees, guys that we just automatically acknowledge as great quarterbacks. And I think with Goff, like the stuff he had to deal with, the noise in the Superdome, the helmet going out, a very good Saints defense. And yeah, they got a little help from the refs, but some of the throws that he made, like, and he wasn't getting help from Todd Gurley. He wasn't getting help from the run game at all, which really set them up early in the season. So I think that Sunday should have been like Jared Goff's coming out party as a legitimately, potentially great young quarterback, one of the best young quarterbacks in the NFL, because he had to go toe-to-toe against a Drew Brees-led offense that has been unstoppable this year. Like, they knew they were going to have to score a ton of points to win the game. And without, you know, his fallback plan of a run game, he went out there and went toe-to-toe, throw for throw with Brees, and they won the ball game. And I think some of the throws that he made, some of the decisions that he made, like, you know, they're not going to be like Patrick Mahomes running around crazy sidearm throws, but just how smart he is and the way he processes things and to see his growth. I mean, I'm not just excited because I liked him as a draft prospect, and it's like it's always good to be right in this business, but like, I'm excited because we need guys like Jared Goff because, you know, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, these guys, they're getting older. They're eventually going to retire. Jared Goff can be one of the five best quarterbacks in the NFL once, you know, this group of tier one guys right now fade out. Like, Goff could be in that top tier very, very soon.
Right next to Mitchell Trubisky, the Pro Bowl quarterback. Shoulder to shoulder with the Pro Bowler.
I like it. I'm there with it. You guys know I like Mitch as well. And, hey, they're right by the same agency, so we can make everybody happy today and just talk about Mitch now.
All right, outside of your obvious professional responsibility, if you can just go back to the fan part of your brain, what's your level of actual interest in this particular Super Bowl matchup?
I think, but I, like, as a fan, like, just as a fan, I actually love Tom Brady. So, like, I want to see him win another ring. And like, all my friends are Chiefs fans. You guys know I'm not. Like, I was rooting for the Chiefs because I want my friends to experience a Super Bowl win. You know, they never have. I wanted to see that happen. So, like, I'm interested in this game. I obviously like offense a lot. You know, that's my background. And I think we do have this, whether the storyline is, like, you know, the greatest to ever do it versus the up-and-comer, I think that's going to be interesting. I want to see what Sean McVay and Bill Belichick do schematically against each other. Like, that might be the most exciting part for me as a fan, of just man, how are these guys going to scheme at each other? Like, what craziness is going to come out of this game? And how do they try to stop one another? It's going to be pretty exciting.
I thought it was fascinating to watch you and other X's and O's guys kind of go through over the weekend the personnel groupings that Bill Belichick was rolling out on offense. This idea that, you know, we've been in an elevated offensive era for the better part of two seasons, the Pat Mahomes kind of stuff, and he's running out offensive sets from 95, and it doesn't feel like Jim Boylan running the Bulls. It feels innovative and weird and cool.
We were at a bar, all of us watching the Chiefs-Patriots game, and they came out in 22 personnel, and my brother, who's on the one of my co-hosts of the podcast, looks at me, and he's like, are they 22 personnel? Like, what is happening? Like, where's the four wide? Like, where's all the motion? And it's like, no, James Devlin's going to play every snap this game, and you guys are going to have to deal with it. So I do love that, like, and it's funny because this is something that we've been saying on the podcast for about 2 years. Someone was going to do this. They were going to go back to power football. The Titans kind of did it a little bit at the end of the year. They were like, you know what? You guys are going to run 5-6 DBs at us. We have a 245-pound running back. Good luck trying to tackle him with your 190-pound safeties playing linebacker. So it's just smart. You know, Belichick is smarter than all of us, and he's able to, you know, window dress things too so that you really don't know where they're going to go with it. And when you have running backs like James White, who's so incredibly valuable to their scheme, you can come out in 22 personnel and still have a very effective passing game because James White is such a good receiver.
And Gronk may not be able to move anymore, but what he does in the run game when he is targeting somebody, it's not quite Quentin Nelson pulling around and screaming as he erases somebody. But if this is the last we see of Gronk, this is it's quite the football legacy to have been known as sort of this uncoverable pass catcher and then still at the end be able to maul people in the run game.
You know, we have a theory at Bleacher Report that Gronk's just going to gain 10 pounds and play left tackle.
Could.
It's going to happen, right? He's a great blocker. Why not? Like, just change your number to 78 or whatever, gain 10 pounds. You're going to lose Trent Brown a free agency. Let Gronk play left tackle. I think he'd be fine at it.
Could you wear 69 as left tackle? Because Gronk would do it.
You can. I'm sure he would do it. That's great. That's a great idea.
Let me ask you this, Matt. For the other two teams, the two that lost here, I think everybody's kind of confident that the Chiefs are fantastic, and even moving on from Kareem Hunt, they'll be fine and moving upward. Where are the Saints at in terms of their roster and in terms of their aging curve? Because I don't know that we saw the throws Drew Brees was making in the first 10 weeks or so that we saw him make in the last 5 weeks. It seemed to be a bit of a shorter arm.
Yeah, I actually thought that too. There was a moment Sunday where I was like, gosh, he usually hits that. Like, it was a little bit surprising. I look at the Saints, and obviously, you know, Brees is 40 years old, so that's the biggest issue. But I think defensively, they have a lot to turn over. And they have some, like, core guys that are great. You know, obviously on offense, Michael Thomas is very, very good. Alvin Kamara is very, very good. And their offensive line is good enough. They're going to be able to get the job done. But on defense, like, man, their linebacking core is just not good. And I think that's where they don't have a first-round pick this year because they traded up to get Marcus Davenport, who really was not a factor, which kind of expected. He's a bit of a developmental guy. But, you know, so I would look at, you know, strong safety. Von Bell has to step up. And I know he played a lot of snaps this past Sunday. Like, we need to see him become a frontline starter. And then at linebacker, they're going to have to address that. And they are a team, because of the salary cap, that they really have to address it in the draft. And I'll tell you guys, this is not a great linebacker draft. It's like Devin White from LSU is probably going to go in the top 10. And then you're really left looking around like, oh, okay, well, what next? So the fact that their first pick is going to be at like number 62 overall puts them in a pretty bad position to keep refilling. Now, obviously, they've drafted well. Jeff Ireland's done a great job there. You know, their 2017 draft is historic for how many players they hit on. But they're going to have to find some diamonds on the rough this year to refill it. You know, D-tackle and linebacker are some pretty major needs they have right now. And that's if they don't draft a quarterback of the future. Teddy Bridgewater is a free agent. God knows what Taysom Hill is. Like, I don't know if he's actually a viable quarterback option long-term or not. But they have, like, for a team that has been so good for so long, they're actually getting to a point where they have some pretty big needs.
Well, that's kind of the question for them, isn't it? I mean, it's they have to be that next franchise to circumvent a gigantic quarterback contract and be that guy. They, like Jared Goff and the Rams, they get to be on his deal and supplement with all the defensive tackles and trades that they've made. I guess it comes down to whether or not you trust the front office to be innovative with that cap hit that Drew Brees carries.
Yeah, and that's why, like, not to revisit the 2018 draft, but that was one of the reasons I didn't like that they traded up for Marcus Davenport, who, like, he wasn't an instant impact guy. And this seems like a team on a pretty short window. So, like, man, why trade up for a developmental pass rusher and lose a future first rounder? So as far as, you know, trade hindsight goes, I didn't like that then. I don't like it now, especially. And maybe they take, you know, some solace in the fact that they got really, really close again. But they are going to have to figure that defense out if they're ever going to be able to topple the Rams. And, you know, the Bears are an up-and-coming team that I believe is going to continue to get deeper into the playoffs because the way they're built and the flexibility they're going to have with the cap, even with Khalil Mack out there. So, I mean, the Saints have, like, more of a rebuild job ahead of them than I think a lot of people realize on paper.
I'm going to give you the measurables. You tell me which NFL prospect this is. He measured this morning at 5'10", weighing 175 pounds.
What?
He has 29-inch arms.
Oh, I already know who it is. You want it?
And his hands are 7¾ inches.
Hunter Renfro.
Yeah. After his 9-year Clemson college career, who many still believe is going to be the next Patriots slot guy, but man, that is really teeny, isn't it?
He's tiny, man, and I like Hunter Renfro, like you said, Dr. Renfro, I guess is what we should call him because he's been in college forever. But man, he's tiny, 7¾ hands. That might be the smallest I've ever seen. Honestly, like we did this once. Like my hands are bigger than that, and I'm, you know, a 5'11 sports writer.
Yeah, so mine are 9½, and I'm 5'8".
Yeah. Whoa, look at that. Man, you got some mids on you. That's good. Did you guys see Sutton Smith came in really small, too? Like, I know he's kind of Northern Illinois guy, kind of in your neck of the woods, but
I love him.
He's small.
I know, but he's that guy, though. He's going to get into camp, and he's the guy on Hard Knocks where Liev Schreiber says, you know, they're having a very difficult time not talking about the play of this guy. And like Riley Buller. So, you know, he's got that guy written all over him.
And he's more athletic than Riley Buller. So are you.
Sure.
Well, yeah. I don't know if he paints or anything, if it would be a good storyline. But
remember what they said on Hard Knocks? Remember they kept saying in the meetings, movement skill.
Yeah.
Right?
He's got movement.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see him, though. I mean, he's, you know, coming at 6 foot flat and 234. It's like he's going to have to convert to linebacker. So I guess we'll figure out here pretty quickly if he can do it or not.
Matt, appreciate it. As always, enjoy yourself down there. And remember, drink water in between things, whatever you're up to. You know, one for one.
Yeah.
Get the ratio.
We both know that won't happen, but I appreciate your concern, guys.
You got it, man.
Matt Miller of Bleacher Report at the Senior Bowl in Mobile.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.